The views expressed on this podcast are those of the participants, not of Reuters News.
Well, what we certainly would like to see happen is in the low-income countries, first, a progress on reducing poverty. Certainly, we see a success that some of the countries will graduate to higher income status. I would expect, particularly in the Asian context, first, a progress and first, a successes.
How can the world fight poverty in these difficult economic times? In this exchange, I sit down with Axel van Trotzenberg, Senior Managing Director at the World Bank, to talk about what rich countries can do to help poor nations, how to navigate around geopolitical tensions, and much more. Welcome to The Exchange. I am Francesco Guerrera, Global Economics Editor at Reuters Breaking Views in London. Today, I'm chatting to Axel van Trotzenberg, Senior Managing Director at the World Bank. He explains that despite significant economic challenges, fiscal restrictions, and geopolitical rifts, rich nations simply cannot weaken their effort to bring developing countries out of poverty. Well, Axel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I guess I'll start from the broader topic. When we're seeing a world in which global growth, trade, globalization all seem to be on the retreat. So what can the World Bank do to help reverse these trends?
Well, the World Bank alone cannot do that, but we can act in concert. Clearly, what we as an institution have always advocated is pro-growth policies, because they are very, very important for poverty reduction. We have always advocated open markets, and together with the fund and with the World Trade Organization, we have been promoting it. This is important that a lot of countries have benefited from open trading systems in their development path. Think a lot of the Asian countries, the East Asian tigers, remember that.
Yep.
They benefited from it. So we believe that open systems are benefiting the global economy, and that we can support through policy-based reforms also in the countries that we serve, but also in our advocacy. And what we also would like to do is that we are providing investment opportunities for countries, so that through our investments, through our public and private sector arms, that can also promote trade related activities.
And are you optimistic that what you just said will help reverse some of these trends and bring back the world to a period of growth and more importantly, trade integration and globalization?
Well, I think that we need to recognize that, unfortunately, there are many geopolitical tensions. We need to work collectively on much more trust. And with more trust, we can actually, again, open up new space for economic opportunities. Certainly, the World Bank, and not only the World Bank, the IMF and other organizations, we have always worked for open dialogue, as well as to see how we can find mutually beneficial solutions. So I think that is where we continue to work on this. We feel that we can be good bridges between different interest groups, and that we also through our track record, have contributed to this dialogue, and hopefully then eventually we can actually return to a more dynamic world economy than what we're seeing today.
Mm-hmm. What are the consequences if we don't?
One of the consequences is, the World Bank is dealing with developing countries, is clearly our concern that this will be reflected in the poverty statistics. We have, over the decades, made unbelievable progress in reducing extreme poverty. Think of this, in the early 1960s, we had over, probably towards two-thirds of the world population was living in extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. By the mid-90s, this figure was down to about a third of the world population. Today, it is less than 9%. So we have made tremendous progress, but we have still now quite a bit of concentration of extreme poor still in Africa and in South Asia. Less growth means that this continued decline will be slowed down. And what we saw, unfortunately, with COVID, that it can be reversed. And that should be a collective concern.
Yeah.
We see also, therefore, that if the world economy cannot give an extra push also for those countries, that their integration into the world economy will be more difficult. So we see more negative consequences for the poorest countries.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that the World Bank does and has done in the past, but that the current president, Ajay Banga, has reiterated he wants to do more of, is to bring in the private sector to help with the funding of some of these initiatives that you talked about. How much progress have you done since he talked about it and wanted to do more?
Well, the private sector role is absolutely critical. You cannot do that. The jobs that are created are by the private sector, and therefore we need to look how you can promote private sector activities. So that is on different levels. There is the domestic private sector, the external private sector, and we believe that certainly the domestic private sector needs to be incentivized, but also the external private sector. And what Ajay Banga, the new president of the bank, did was he came also from the private sector and basically assembled what we call private sector investment lab with many eminent CEOs to talk about all these private sector challenges, what we can do better in terms of incentives, but also on new initiatives. And the role is multiple. The World Bank can provide support through policy-based reform so that we work with governments to create a more stimulating environment for private investment. But we can also do that through private investment itself. We have two private sector entities, the IFC and MIGA, that can help, and the policy-based reforms can be done through our public sector arms, the IBRD and IDA, that is the two public institutions. In addition, there are sometimes accompanying infrastructure investments mm-hmm. necessary. Think of this in the energy area. Yeah. Think of the transport area. So those things we are doing as well. And clearly, we believe it cannot be done only by the public sector. We need to really get the full benefits of the private sector. And as a last idea, is clearly they're concerned about jobs, mm-hmm. particularly jobs in Africa. You know, there are over millions of new entrants every year. And the unfortunate story is that only a fraction finds new jobs.
Yeah.
And so that means the private sector has a huge role to play in shaping the future of Africa.
So in the private sector naturally is after returns, certainty, market transparency, and so on. How would you rate the World Bank progress in providing those elements to the private sector?
Well, I look at over time, and then what you see some of the challenges. Look, I believe that if you are looking in countries where we have been for decades engaged, from East Asia to South Asia, Latin America, and Africa, you see in Asia an absolute transformation from one of the poorest countries to high income status. One of the extreme examples are Korea. In 1953, it was poorer than Ghana. You saw Singapore at independence, extremely poor. Now you see a country extremely prosperous. So here is very clearly private sector activities, but also where you see also multilateral cooperation can pay off. Also, Africa has made many strides, but very often the problem in Africa is that if something goes wrong in one country, it's generalized. We never do that in Europe, that if there is something going on in a country X, that we then say all out of a sudden, Germany or France are going down. That kind of thing we say in Africa with an ease, but in Europe elsewhere, we don't do it. We need to see that more nuanced. And you see countries that have enormously developed, But then you see, unfortunately, also in Africa, particularly in fragile states, that things are far more challenging and difficult. Hmm.
Those are the ones that need most help, though, right?
They need most help, and that is also where we are increasingly engaged. Why is that so? Because that is also where the highest concentration of extreme poor are. We expect that by 2030 that about half of the extreme poor living on this planet are going to be living in this fragile state. So therefore, we need to focus on this. Yeah. They are, of course, also otherwise a source of instability. And therefore, I think one needs to really focus on them.
So crucial to all of this is the International Development Association, IDA, you mentioned it before, which is the World Bank's arm that gives grants and credits to the world's poorest countries, right? You're in the process of replenishing it, as you call it. So last time you raised, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in 2021 you raised $23 billion yourself and then tapped the private sector for to go up to $93 billion. You've already said you wanted to be bigger this time. How much bigger do you think, and how is it going?
So, first of all, what we did is we transformed the financing of IDA a couple of years back, and we are able to tap into the international capital markets. So we have also a AAA rating, and with $23.5 billion of donor contributions, and of course some of the reflows that we are getting, we are able to leverage this up to $93 billion. We want to be ambitious. I've done this before. I think this is never an easy environment because all governments are under stress. There are always fiscal challenges. What I always take comfort in is this is the negotiation that is probably one of the most constructive exercises because there is a base solidarity around the table. Mm-hmm. And as well, sometimes, you know, with all the difficulties, you have to say also with donors that at the end of the day, we have come to good solutions. Never easy, because when you're dealing with billions of dollars, there are always different opinions, and that is okay. What is most important is that we are able to work together. Mm-hmm. And I would say that is actually encouraging in the World Bank in general. It is in IDA where we get everybody around the table, not only OECD countries, but we can get China around the table. We have India around it, other developing countries. Mm-hmm. Same, the other a year where we created the pandemic fund together with the WHO, that was a G20 initiative. We got all the G20 countries participating. So the bank can be a good also convener of all different parties, and we can still find solutions despite all the geopolitical tensions. In IDA, we want to be particularly ambitious mm-hmm. because the challenges are large. Because COVID has left these countries worse off. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the so-called sustainable development goals are way off. Mm-hmm. Not only the poverty, but you look at in water supply, yeah. your health, you name it. And so we will need also to make an additional effort by all to see can we actually recover some of the lost space. And so we are engaging with the donors. We started this off in March. I think that, you know, we got good feedback. With the replenishment going through the year, nobody will tell you already how much they will pledge. But that is the usual game. We're dancing around. Everybody wants to look over each other's shoulder to find out what the other want to give. That is the traditional thing. That's good. But the main part is it is focused to really make a difference in these countries. We're very happy that President Ruto of Kenya is going to host a presidential summit on the 29th of April in Nairobi mm-hmm. to talk precisely about IDA, about the programs of the African leadership, to see how we can support them and really give this a further push for development in Africa and elsewhere.
And given your experience in this, do you think, are you optimistic that you will get above the last time?
I'm optimistic. I've always, when I took this over, we always went for a new record. It is not going to be easy. We will fight for that. This is something, this is important to keep the solidarity, but also the development prospects alive. And I think certainly we owe it to all our partners in Africa and in the other low-income countries to do a maximum effort. If you are not an optimist, you shouldn't do this.
Right. And what would you regard as a success? 23.5 or 30 or above 23?
I will push everybody, and they know that we'll stress them, but that is our job. We don't get a bonus. We don't get anything. We are fighting for the cause.
Fair enough. One way to then expand whatever you raise from the donors on the capital markets would be to give up the AAA rating, right? But do you want to do that?
One of the things is, don't forget, if you have a AAA rating, you get the best possible terms. Mm-hmm. And that is to the benefit of these countries. We need always to say, you know, if you give up something, there may be a consequence. So if I give up a AAA rating, there will be a higher interest to be paid. And somebody has to pay. And this these poor countries have to pay. So in times when countries are already struggling with debt problems, we want to keep this a concessional for all, for your listeners. IDA is concessional. That means that we are, in most cases, not even charging an interest rate, but we are providing long-term money over 40 years, 10 years grace in the very poor countries, or, for example, in fragile countries that are really struggling, like in the Sahel zone or like in the Horn of Africa. They often get the benefit of outright grants. So we are differentiating the situation. And it is, I think, important to be mindful of the debt challenges the country has, the state of their development on their poverty situation, to provide them the best possible financing terms. So that in that context, our AAA helps them because we get the best possible terms from our international capital markets. So we don't want to tinker on that.
Makes sense. Is there any way to not to think about to change a little bit the mix between grants and loans? So
we did that in the last, mm-hmm. that we actually converted some of the possibility of grants into very long-term loans. I'm talking here 50-year mm-hmm. Loans with over 10 years grace. So there are all those things that in terms of the grant element, this is still very high. That is the degree of concessionality, you are looking at 80% or higher. So these are very concessional loans. They are also important on this, but we are looking how we can find a package that is strong also for the donors to make the case in front of their parliaments, because after all, they need parliamentarian approval. We will also need that the beneficiary countries do the most they can also to contribute. That means, be it that they are also mindful of domestic resource mobilization, that they need to contribute to that process as well. And then we are looking, of course, always for balance sheet optimization. Can we do something more so that basically the overall pie mm-hmm. is bigger, as you suggest, but also that it is fairly distributed in terms of effort by every party?
And so with the last few minutes that remain to us, if we met again in 10 years' time, what would you like the legacy of this next burst of development and best burst award by the World Bank to be? What would you like to see happen?
Well, what we certainly would like to see happen is in the low-income countries, first a progress on reducing poverty, certainly we see a success that some of the countries will graduate to a higher income status. I would expect, particularly in the Asian context, further progress and further successes. We had, of course, huge successes with India, with also Vietnam, Indonesia, even temporary China. Yeah. They benefited. The next one is actually Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. Bangladesh, at the end independence, was one of the poorest countries in the world. Now it has a per capita income that is higher than of India. It has really developed, mm-hmm. and their aspiration is really to go to middle and upper middle income status. They're very ambitious on this. We applaud that. We would like to see that, of course, in other cases as well. So that is with the low-income countries. Yeah. For the middle-income countries, I think what we have is that we help them on the growth agenda. Yeah. In some of the countries, their growth agenda has suffered. Some feel that they are in what we call the middle-income trap, that they that doesn't. We hope that we can break that cycle in some of the countries. And then overwhelmingly, we need to be excellent fighters against the global public challenges. That can be in the health area, that we have a much stronger preventive system that prevents the next pandemic. We're working on that. We need international cooperation. The bank is part of that coalition in 10 years' time. I hope that with this system in place, we have early detection and we can avoid COVID too. And I think with sufficient effort, we can do. Secondly, climate change.
Yeah.
Climate change is of a massive challenge. And here we hope that we can be a key player in providing financing, knowledge, technical assistance to countries. We're already the largest financier. We have basically doubled our financing. Our public financing went from 14 to over 29 billion in 4 years. We have aspiration to do more with the public. Mm-hmm. Our private sector arm, we were last year at 38 billion. We want now to go to 45% of total commitments going to climate change in the next year, in the next fiscal year. So we have our ambition set out of it. We can only do that, of course, also in cooperation with others, but we want to be an aggressive actor that helps shape us to a better world, and hopefully we can arrest the big challenges posed by climate change.
So on that positive note, cautiously positive note, thank you so much for being with us, Alex.
Pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. This podcast was produced by Oliver Tashlish in London. Subscribe to The Exchange and assist the podcast, The Views Room, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. Catch up with our latest views and much more on breakingviews.com and on X, where our handle is @breakingviews.
I'm Kim Vanell. Join me every morning for a roundup of what's happening at home and around the world. From the front line in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
To the heart of US politics.
When Trump said that he expected to be arrested, it seems like he was trying to get ahead of the story.
We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes. For your essential daily briefing, follow Reuters World News wherever you get your podcasts.